Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 34, a conversation with Allison Canavan, and today it's November 13th, 2023. In this episode, Allison Canavan, a former international model from Ireland, an acclaimed international speaker, wellness coach, and mindfulness advocate. Overcoming mental health struggles and addictions, Allison found healing and transformed herself into a source of inspiration. Named one of the top 8 transformational coaches in the U.S. by USA Today in 2021, Allison is a UCLA-trained mindfulness facilitator from the Semmel Institute of Neuroscience and Human Behavior. She is a master NLP practitioner, heart math facilitator, nutritional coach, raw food master, meditation and breathwork teacher, and the award-winning author of Minding Mom, It's Time to Take Care of You, the world's first 360 self-care book for moms focusing on health and well-being post-birth. Allison was prescribed Xanax for anxiety when she was 16. The doses gradually increased when she moved to America to pursue her modeling career. For many years, Allison struggled with alcoholism and anxiety. Eventually, she decided to wean herself off of alcohol, Xanax, Lexapro, and recreational drugs. Allison describes her transformational journey, and we discuss mental health, among other things. Find Allison at AllisonCanavan.com. Hi, Allison. Welcome to Benzo Tired.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. It's so awesome to finally meet you. So I found your name in the Irish Independent talking about your Xanax story. Be it somewhat summarized, but could you share with the audience where your Xanax story begins?
Oh, gosh. I started modeling at 15. And, you know, I was fast asleep, obviously, at that age. Like, now I'm completely awake. I was, like, fast asleep. My entire life, Naftal, like, so up until this point, had been spent on antibiotics. Like, I had chronic asthma. So, like, this runs deeper, I feel, into more than just a benzo. You know, it's the overprescription of everything. So of course, being that age, I never connected my chronic, you know, chest infections every year and different things. It was always like, oh, but you've asthma, oh, but you've this. Yeah, but I was on like 3 steroid inhalers and, you know, lots of different things. I was constantly in hospital when I was super young on nebulizers. You know, every time I went to the doctor with any kind of complaint, it was like prescription. Prescription, prescription. Now, as someone who does what I do now, just to let your audience know, I'm a holistic practitioner. So I'm a holistic coach. I'm a motivational speaker. And I treat people like from a full 360 perspective. And I'm actually in awe at how much was prescribed to me when I was young. Like, no wonder I had horrific gut issues. Like horrific gut issues, horrific immune issues. I have healed my asthma through my lifestyle and breath work.
Wow, that's great.
No asthma, no inhalers.
But I mean, being so young and being prescribed all of that, I mean, were you still like in the mode like, okay, well, this doctor's telling me that I need this, so I'll just take it?
I mean, like, you know, we're in the world still, not as much in the community I'm in, but a lot of people still live in the world where the doctor is God. And you do whatever you're told because they're the expert, they have the education. So we live in a world where we are conditioned and programmed to not ask questions. Don't ask questions. They know best. They're the people that are smarter, better than you. And when I say all of this, I do believe there's a place for everything. I do. If I was in an accident tomorrow and I was rushed to the hospital, I'm going to want the best doctors and surgeons that there are in the world. But I do believe we've got to understand that there's not a pill for every ill. There's not, you know, because a lot of the things that we're trying to, I suppose, medicate for is an emotional issue. It's trauma. It's stuff that, you know, all we're doing with the pills is numbing. So I started modeling at 15, 16. I was really nervous flying on my own. And that's when I was prescribed my first benzo for nervous flying.
Right. And you got Xanax?
I got Xanax. I'm trying to think. Was it Xanax when I was 15? I have been prescribed so many benzos through the years. I think it was actually Xanax, yes. And I think the general narrative with myself and my friends at that age was Xanax is for chronic headaches. And like, it was not for what it's actually used for. Like, it was prescribed for a lot of different things, you know? And I started taking it and it took the edge off. Took the edge off and I was flying on my own. It took the edge off. I mean, really what was going on was that I was 15, 16, traveling as a model on my own, you know, experiencing a sense of loneliness and nervousness. And, you know, a pill is not going to fix that.
Right. So, right.
Yeah, that's where it all started.
Right. And did you just take it as needed or when you were flying or did it increase over time?
Yeah, I took it as needed. Just in the beginning, like everybody with all of these stories, I'm sure, you know, you just take it as needed. There's no dependency on it. You know, it's but there the dependency comes after the connection, I feel. So what started to happen in my mind, and I'm also in recovery, just to make that clear, from drinking drugs about 8.5 years now. So benzos played a huge part in my addictive cycle as well as the years progressed. In the beginning, what was more dangerous was that I was making the connection with, when I was anxious, when I was overwhelmed, I took a half a benzo. I do remember though going to a doctor, this is years after that, like I was in my early 20s, saying that I felt anxious, you know, say the subways would stop in New York in between stations and I would find myself, my hands would start palpitating, my palms would be sweaty, and I would literally be having an all-out, full-blown panic attack. And I was hospitalized twice for panic attacks in New York, on, you know, heart monitors and everything, thinking I was dying. Like, my anxiety was really, really, really bad. And he just said, take an extra half of Xanax before you leave the house.
Wow. What year was that?
So I was about 26. I'm 45. So 19 years ago. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I guess you still believe at this point that Xanax is harmless and you up the dose and...
I mean, at this point, I was starting to... At this point, I knew that my lifestyle was not good. I knew that I didn't have a hold over drink and drugs. I knew that I was using it to go to sleep after partying, that I was using it to take the edge off if I had a really important meeting. So I knew that I was using it and it wasn't serving me. How serious the problem was, no, I didn't know. Especially when a doctor is saying, just take an extra half of Xanax.
Right.
Now, I look back at that now and I'm thinking, wow, there was no questions on. Probably the question he should have asked me was, how much are you drinking?
Right, right, right.
How many nights are you going out? What does your lifestyle look like? Do you exercise? You know, what's the state of your mental health really like? Are you happy in what you're doing? Do you like New York? You know, like, what happened to connecting the dots? And we still have that problem. Like, I know I'm in an industry where I suppose I feel like everybody talks about this, but I'm acutely aware when I step outside and move into my corporate work and everything and the questions I ask, I'm like, okay, so this really is still not being spoken about at all.
It's not, unfortunately. Luckily, there's this whole grassroots kind of, you know, people that are not having it and they're speaking out and they're basically, the core is the same, that we want different healthcare. We don't want to be fixed with pills. Mm-hmm. Air quotes. We want to have some, you know, connection and the right questions and some holistic therapy, or, you know, it's just a broken system and doctors only have like an X amount of time and they don't really possess, in my opinion, that holistic kind of view on life. You know, their toolbox is all pills and stuff like that. So there is change, but it's slow. So at this point, in your story, you kind of decide like, okay, I need to change my lifestyle and Xanax is not a part of that.
Well, no, it took a long time actually. So Xanax, I never really saw as the problem because I still in my mind was like, okay, drink and illegal drugs are the problem, you know, and anything that's prescribed by the doctor still hadn't hit the category of problem yet. So
right.
I hadn't really woken up to the system. I still kind of had one foot in the door of trusting doctors, you know, and was heavily, heavily, heavily indoctrinated when I was young into you know, our own family doctor who my mom thought the world of. So, you know, she would just kind of like, you had to do what he said. Like, he's the person that had his our best interest at heart. And like, in saying that, I don't believe for a second that he didn't have our best interests at heart and didn't care about my family and didn't care about my well-being. But we have to understand that these people are playing in a play field that they have been taught the rules that are totally different. I mean, it's not healthcare, it's sick care.
Yes.
You know, it's not healthcare. Like, it's not a healthcare system. Like, there is no money in well-being. Like, I've just teamed up with a company where we're exploring, they're amazing musicians and they do a lot of work through frequency and, you know, the frequency for pain and the frequency for autoimmune and the frequency for all of this. I mean, if that got out to the wider audience, sure, there's no money for the system.
Yeah.
And that's really what this comes down to. It's the bigger picture. And so what my mission has been through the years is to try and help people wake up to the fact that you're 100% up to you. You have to do your research and you have to ask questions. But in saying that, Naftal, like, I am a questioner. So like, and I still ask questions. So it's, this programming runs deep. It runs really, really deep. And then the programming runs deep that even when you do decide to step out of the system, if something happens to you or you have anxiety or you're not well, you start questioning yourself. Oh my God, I shouldn't have done that. Oh my God, I shouldn't have done this. Maybe they're right. Maybe I am this. Maybe I am the label they told me. I mean, I was told you're an anxious and depressed person. Like, that's just who you are. You're anxious and depressed. So you will always be struggling with this. So I was kind of like, okay, if I'm always struggling with this, clearly then I have to take stuff from the outside to help make me feel better, because I believed that story. I don't believe that story anymore. In fact, I just think it's the most ridiculous, ludicrous, nonsensical story I've ever heard, to tell people that they're just anxious and depressed. I now understand it's nervous system dysregulation, you know, and I spend, what I do now is I teach people about energy management.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think most of my guests, and including myself, my own story, I got labeled at some point with chronic fatigue syndrome whilst being on extremely high level of benzos. And no one was ever like, hey, see that like massive amount of benzodiazepines that you're taking? That is the root cause of your problem. And they basically gave me management on how to deal with my fatigue. Nowhere was there like, hey, the drugs need to go, get informed, something like that. So most of us get labels and we believe in those labels because we're still in that kind of, then we're still in this mode of, this is a psychiatrist, this is a psychologist. They studied for this. They should know. Yep. So we just follow them until we wake up and then, you know, it's different. So when did you start weaning yourself off of the Xanax?
So I was put on an antidepressant after I had my son. So when I was pregnant, I took nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's really interesting when it's not about you anymore. I had no problem, not drinking, not taking anything, not taking medication. It was like, I didn't even have to think about it. It's so interesting how the mind, the power of the mind, when it was about somebody else, zero. So as soon as, I remember though, after I had the baby, I was breastfeeding, so I took nothing. And then when I kind of was easing myself back into alcohol again, which is such a ridiculous illusion. You know, it's like, oh, I'm just going out to have one or two, which turned into 50, and then throwing up and going, oh, I still have no control over alcohol. That's interesting. And I remember, you know, feeling like I was having a panic attack and going through a really hard time. Like, a friend just came over and handed me half his Xanax. You know, she was like, take this. You know, it's going to take the edge off. And that's what we do. Like, that's because we don't know how to hold space for people. We don't know how to deal with emotions. It's like, oh my God, if you just take this, it'll go away. Like, it'll stop. And then I can relax and you can relax and we can all relax and all this emotional stuff can stop. And so I remember being on a mixture of benzos and antidepressants. And I said to the doctor that I felt very spacey. I had also been doing a lot of, you know, meditation and gratitude and everything. And it's almost like the effects of the medication were becoming more heightened. And I really felt that I was not present on the medication. Like my response systems were even slow. Like, you know, people said they would call my name and I go, yeah.
Right.
It's like,
right.
What? Like, I, did you not hear me? It's like, yeah, no, I did. Yeah. And it's like, oh, is there really that much of a gap? So I remember the doctor saying, oh, no, we have a plan for you. We're going to keep building until you get to such a stage. And then we're going to look at where you are. And I'm like, no, I'm telling you now that this is not working for me. So I started weaning myself 5 milligrams every week and weaned myself. And that was
the antidepressant.
Antidepressant, yeah, and the benzos. Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember which antidepressant you were on?
Oh, Lexapro, I think then.
Right, right. Mm. How was that like?
Tapering. I was horrible. Things. Horrible.
What were your symptoms? What were your symptoms?
I just felt dirty. Like, I just, the only way I can describe it, like groggy, like trapped in my head. It's like I could, there was a part of me that wanted to kind of get out, but it couldn't. It was like being trapped in myself. You know, I couldn't have the conversations I wanted to have. I remember kind of sitting in the car and it's almost like it suppressed everything, but I could feel like there was a big bubble about to explode within me. But with the medication, it was kind of keeping it there. Does that make any sense?
It does.
Like I have a vision of sitting in the car and just feeling numbed out. And I think that was the turning point for me, was I was so sick of feeling numbed out. I had numbed myself out since I was freaking 15.
Yeah.
Like with everything I could get my hands on. And now I was a new mom and I was like, I am so done with numbing out. I don't want to be numbed out anymore. Like, what if these feelings are meant to be felt? And I have never looked back. I have never looked back. But I will tell you something, the withdrawal from benzos is probably worse than the withdrawal I've had from drinking drugs.
And when you say drinking drugs, what kind of drugs should I be thinking about?
Oh, gosh. Like, I used cocaine a lot when partying as a model. You know, when I was young, I was big into the dance scene. We used a lot of different things at the time. Whatever was around, you did ecstasy and everything. So a lot of recreational drugs. Right. And then a lot of alcohol. Alcohol was always the main thing for me. Alcohol was the addiction. Nothing else would have ever happened without alcohol, including the benzos, interestingly enough. Nothing would have happened without the alcohol. The alcohol was first. When I took the alcohol out, everything went with it. Everything. Right. It was the precursor. That's why I'm so outspoken about alcohol, because people are like, oh, you know, it's not this and it's not that. And I'm like, there is not one other drug that would have entered my system without alcohol going in first. Nothing.
Right. Right. I think in this country, in where I live in the Netherlands, there is more of a awareness coming now how damaging alcohol is. And interestingly, they work on the same receptors as benzodiazepines do. Mm. So currently, you know, I'm not really in the partying scene, but it's kind of like hip now to do alcohol-free drinks. Mm-hmm. It's a whole new thing. Yeah. And I'm glad for it. I'm glad for it.
Oh, I wish that was around when I was young, because the pressure in Ireland, like, I got sober 8.5 years ago in Ireland, and it was such a harsh, lonely time. Like, I still feel really emotional about it. It's almost like it was almost traumatizing to get sober in Ireland. And now we have like an alcohol-free bar in Dublin Airport, and there's this massive movement with people. But not only was it a difficult time to get sober, but like, it was like you were just an outcast. It was like you didn't get invited to stuff. People weren't comfortable having you around. And it was a very, very challenging time for me. So things have changed quickly, which is amazing. But I will say, for anybody out there who's drinking and who struggles with anxiety and depression, the first thing that's got to go is the alcohol. It has to. It just has to. Like, if you're even on benzos, the first thing that has to go still is the alcohol.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I've had a few people on that also struggled with alcoholism. Yeah. And it just destroys the same receptors. And, you know, we know now, that alcohol is so detrimental when you're on benzo, so that it's gotta go, especially when you're withdrawing from it. How long did your entire taper, including the benzos, the antidepressant, how long did that last?
Oh, just a few months.
Okay,
Yeah, just a
okay.
few months that time. But I mean, my worst years would have been my time in New York, you know,
Right.
and that's when kind of that's also when pills were handed around freely amongst friends, or you know, you'd be in someone's house and they'd be like, "Oh, take this when you go home." That is still going on, by the way. With
Right.
moms and people regularly pass around their prescription pills, like
Right.
candy.
Now I'm super fascinated in if you have been numbing yourself for all those years, how is it like to get in touch with your true self, as you will?
Oh, take away all that, the fun really begins, right? I mean, people go, "Oh, wow, I'm going to get sober. I'm going to give up all this." And then it takes a long time for your body. Like, I'll tell you somebody who really, really helped me, Dr. Kelly Brogan. I don't know if you've ever heard of her in New York. She was
No.
based in New York at the time. She's based in Florida. She's an extraordinary psychiatrist. And she now works in the holistic space, but she wrote a book, A Mind of Your Own. She works with women mainly. And she wrote an entire segment about benzos and antidepressants and everything else. And reading her book and reading her work really helped to shift my entire focus to understanding that they actually don't have much research to back any of this up anyway, which is really interesting. And another guy who was really helpful to me was Dr. Gabor Maté. I don't know if you've heard of him in this space. So he talks an awful lot about addiction as well. He's amazing. And he talks a lot about the relationship to trauma. But for me, and the work is still ongoing, like at 45, I'm a breathwork teacher, I'm a meditation teacher. I understand that like we're like onions and we're peeling layers off, you know, one layer at a time. And in the beginning, when you move into recovery, it's like the fun is just beginning and it can feel very overwhelming because it's almost like all the emotions that have been trapped for years are seeking your attention because they have to come up, right? If they're not coming up, they're being repressed and suppressed. They're turning into dis-ease. That's all that word means. It means I'm not at ease with myself. And so those emotions become trapped. They cause pain. They cause physical health issues, mental health issues, spiritual health. And so it has been an intense journey. I'm not going to lie. Like it's been an intense journey of committing to showing up for myself every single day.
Right.
It's not like the odd time, it's every single day. And that starts as soon as my eyes open in the morning. You know, I always say, win the morning, win the day. Like, I did not want to wake up early this morning. So it's interesting. I love Tony Robbins. I think he's amazing. And he was doing a lot of the personal development work long before most people. Like, everybody's doing ice baths now. That man was doing it 18 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Right,
Like,
right, right.
he was way, way, way ahead of everybody. But I always remember watching a video of his where he said, "Do you really think I wake up every morning and I want to get into 56 degrees of water? No. I don't." And there's something quite soothing about that. It's like someone who is the greatest teacher in the world in this space, in my eyes, and says, "Every day I wake up, I don't want to do the things I know are going to make me feel better." But he goes, "I know when I prime my energy for the day, everything changes." And
Yeah.
that's one of the things that I keep reminding myself. It's every morning I do my gratitude, my meditation, my red light. Because I know what it's like to be living in hell, which is what benzos and addiction and drugs and everything is. It's hell. And
Yeah.
it always starts off as fun. Everything starts off as fun. It's nice to take a benzo and go out to the bar and sit and have a few drinks and feel this floaty feeling and feel like you're not present. And you're kind of like, yeah, this is nice. And I feel like I'm floating on a cloud and I'm all numbed out. And over time, that's actually what you're chasing, but that's not what you're getting. And the
Right.
highs and the numbing out have to be higher, but the lows are like so horrific. Like the
Yep.
next day is so horrific. The self-hatred, the negative talk, the feeling. And I know I've used the word dirty before, but it's the only words I can use because coming down off any drug, prescription or otherwise, makes you feel yucky and dirty inside your body, outside
Right.
your body, but also inside your body. It's like you can't shake it. It's like you can't shower it off. It's like it's a horrible, crawling, yucky sensation. And I was done with that. That was really what I was like. I can't do this anymore. I can't do the, I didn't want to wake up because the feelings were so horrendous. You right. know, it's just like spending my day going, how can I take the edge off? What can I do? What can I take to take the edge off? That's not a life. That's, no. you're not thriving. You're not living. At best, you're surviving. And I was good at putting on a show. I was very good at, hey, how are you? You know, right. but sure, I was a master of hiding my emotions forever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you just get very proficient at it.
Right, right. And again, I just think we're just, most of us are getting the wrong help, because in my personal journey, it took me 5 years to get cognitive behavioral therapy. And that just changed my whole view yeah. on things. And that inspired me to come off of the benzos, not knowing it was going to be almost lethal.
What happened with you?
I almost died.
Oh my gosh.
It's a long story, but I was on, like I said, I was on a high level of benzodiazepines. Mm. I got bad advice and how to come off of it. Mm. And then I had a cold turkey event because I was like, I'm done with this. I didn't know that it could take years to taper. And I was like, I'm done. I just want to be drug free. Unfortunately, some of us get so physiologically dependent yep. on these drugs that we can actually get grand mal seizures and die. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with me. And then I instated the benzo and then everything went away. Like, oh gosh. Okay. So there's something going on with this drug. So it took me a long time to get informed and get in touch with the community, only to find out what benzodiazepines really are and that they work on the same receptors as alcohol. None of that was told to me, you know, like I wasn't warned, no informed consent. I was told they could be addictive. And I really did not know the damage of benzodiazepines, how big that was. So that's why I started my advocacy and the podcast.
Oh, I was never told at any stage by anyone that it could be addictive. Never. Wow. I never remember that conversation.
That still happens because I had Emma Saunders from the UK on, who got prescribed Ativan, which is lorazepam, during the pandemic. Mm. Back in the UK. And her private doctor told her, it's perfectly safe. I give it to old ladies.
Oh, sugar.
And 6 months later, she has totally lost it. She quit the benzo and was, you know, went to mental facilities and just crazy. She survived, luckily, but that's what can happen. You know, there are just cases where people just really have like a horrible, horrible, you know, time trying to get off of all these drugs.
And also what I see amongst a lot of women that come to me and that I speak to, and I work with a lot of women in addiction, is the shame and embarrassment, because a lot of them are like stay-at-home moms, right? Nice. Or they have like very high-powered jobs and they're CEOs and they're very well-respected. And they try to come off meds or reduce their drinking or anything else that they're taking. The withdrawal, like you said, happens. And it kind of kicks in that, oh my gosh, am I an addict? And the shame of that prevents them from actually getting help, which is yep. so sad, because we have such a stigma. I don't know, like, I know it's not benzos, but I just watched a documentary called Painkiller here in the States. That's on Netflix.
I've seen it. Yeah.
I mean, how are every single one of these people, including the reps, not in prison? It just breaks my heart, because that's still going on today.
Yeah.
Oh, over the place.
Yep. And the same thing happens with benzos. So if, you know, within the community, we tend to have like a different concept of physical dependency versus addiction. But, you know, if it is addiction, you know, our doctors are our dealers and they are the mafia, you know, and we're trying to make a difference, but it's hard. This has been going on since the 1960s with the benzos and then the OxyContin. I think it's, you know, I don't know when it came out, but later on. But it is, you know, prescription harm. It is prescription harm. And I would love to have a community or just the world go onto a path in the future where we just have a holistic coach or someone that we can visit instead of that doctor. You know, we really have to change our culture. And maybe the GP is not the first step. I mean, like you said, if I have an accident tomorrow, I want the best surgery, everything. But if there is an issue with insomnia or anxiety or depression, I think the GP should be step number 5 or not at all. Yes. Like, I think we need different help. We got the wrong help. So if people would be interested in your services, where could they find you?
Oh, AlisonCanavan.com. AlisonCanavan.com. And I'm on Instagram at AlisonCanavanWellness. But I can just say I really agree with you. I'm trying to think of the last time myself and my son were at the doctor. We're in the States 4 years. We've never been to a doctor since we've been here. I think we had to go to the doctor in Ireland a couple of times. Interesting. I have never been to a doctor since I left Ireland. Wow, that's like in the States, never. Right. And if I was not feeling good, like we do chiropractic work every week, right? Because I'm all about nervous system regulation and helping my son kind of move through his traumas through nervous system regulation and that kind of. So I'm big into taking care of yourself and just not in the regular fashion.
Right, right. So are your plans to stay in the US or are you at some point going back to Ireland?
No, my plans are to stay here. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So how did you get in touch with the Irish Independent considering the benzo thing?
Oh, so I lived in Ireland. So I moved back home from New York when I was 32 to have my son and spent about 8 or 9 years back in Ireland. So I started speaking about postnatal depression when James was a baby, which is a subject that had never been talked about really, and kind of brought that out to the forefront and started speaking about mental health issues and just bringing more awareness to it. And I started getting hundreds and hundreds of emails from mom saying, wow, thank you so much. I really felt like I was on my own. I felt like I was the person that really couldn't cope, and you've helped me to feel more normal. But then it started to get into just how bad and how deep our mental health issues were in Ireland. And, you know, it is a system in Ireland that is fully controlled. It's, you know, the wellness industry, thankfully, and like the recovery industry, space now is really flourishing and growing. And the narrative is shifting. But Ireland has come through some very dark times, not even in my lifetime, but in centuries before. And I'm a firm believer that we carry our trauma in our DNA from our ancestors. And the work that we're here to do is not just our work. It's to free 7 generations behind and 7 generations in front. And I think the work that we're all responsible for is the work we do in ourselves. People always ask me, how can I change the world? And I'm like, by changing yourself. Yeah. Like, it's not about changing others. It's not about judging. It's not about pointing fingers and telling people what to do. It's about going inside and healing yourself. Because for every healed heart in this world, we not only raise the vibration, but we help to heal humanity and wake each other up from that place and space. And so what I went through, I believe, was an absolute gift, because the level of, I suppose, gratitude I have for health is huge. Like, I just, when I was using and partying and putting all everything I could get into my body, I didn't care about myself. I had no self-esteem. I couldn't have cared less whether I was here or not, to be perfectly honest with you. And now I just have this incredible gratitude for life and for each breath we take. And my mission is to help people understand that you can live and survive and move through tough days and move through hard times and deal with it. Like, we're not just here to experience good emotions like joy and happiness. We're here to experience the deepest level of grief, the deepest level of pain. And if we keep teaching people that, you know, I remember my dad dying, for example, and going to the doctor and him offering everyone pills. Oh, you know, your dad just died, you're grieving. Let me take the edge off. You know, I'll give you something to, we do that all the time. You know, let me give you something to sleep. Let me give you, my gosh, what about like feeling into the grief because we just saw someone we loved and understanding that it is a part of the human experience. So I think as human beings, we have to start understanding that there's no shortcuts. Nobody has a secret that they're keeping from you. You know, we can't just cut off half of ourselves and pretend it doesn't exist and only accept the good parts of us. And until we start to understand as human beings that these are feelings that are seeking our attention, that, you know, they're just as important as the love and the happiness, that's where our real growth is. Because none of us grow really like we do during good times, like we do during pain. Like, mm-hmm. what we go through when we go through a hard time really determines the person we become for the future. It's where we learn how resilient we are. You know, it's where we learn our true strength And I never knew I was strong as I was. And if I hadn't come out of the system, who knows, I probably wouldn't be here.
Right, right. And I think, you know, the thing with alcohol and benzodiazepine, the tranquilizers, is the problem that you take it for doesn't go away. You just numb it. So it will come back like a boomerang in the future. You know, you have to deal with whatever's going on to face it and to be able to heal. And that's the problem with benzos or alcohol, is like, you're just numbing. That's all that you're doing. You're not fixing it. It's not a cure.
And the problem is that the more you take it and the more time that goes on, whether it's months or years, the problem gets worse. Like the coming off, it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. I was watching the Robbie Williams documentary with my son, and he was, you know, he was on everything. You know, when he was like, it was Vicodin and painkillers. I think there was also benzos thrown in there, if I remember correctly. And it was really interesting to watch. I was saying to my son, do you see the trajectory that addiction takes you on? I said, in the beginning, it's all fun. You know, even when he was young, you're out, you're partying, you're fun, you're resilient. I used to be able to turn up to a modeling shoot having been out all night. I'm sure it stunk of alcohol and it wasn't that pleasant to be around, but that was incredibly normalized in my industry. Like, I wish it wasn't. Oh God, that was so normalized, if not encouraged. You know, it'd be like, oh, you're so great. You were out last night. Who were you out with? Blah, blah, blah. You know, my gosh, I was like 16 years of age. Wow. Somebody should have been taking care of me, not like rewarding me for being out partying with like quote unquote cool people. But anyway, and one of the things I was looking at, and if we even look at Matthew Perry, who just passed away, like when we look at addiction, you always end up in a room on your own at some stage in the addiction. The partying's over, the fun is over, and now you're in a bathroom on your own, at war with yourself, at war with your mind, at war with your world, taking another pill in the hopes of just taking the edge off for a short time. And that to me is the tragedy of all of this, is that it never gets better, it only gets worse. And the longer you're on them, the longer the dependency is, the longer it's going to take for your body to recover. Like, it's so sad to me to watch what happens, because it doesn't have to be that way. That's what's so annoying.
Yeah, it's tragic, what you said. And additionally, I would argue, and actually we know this now, that particularly with alcohol, so possibly with benzos too, is our brains are developing, you know, at 23, 25, something. So if we are... And that was in my time with alcohol as well. I used to get wasted, but, you know, every Saturday and not every day. But, you know, it harms our brains, and it's still growing. So if you like your intellect and all of that, stay off of the booze, as you will. So thank you so much for your time, Allison. Thank you very, very much. And keep up the good work. And I'm so proud of you for speaking out. And thank you. We need that. We need more people, and specifically women like yourself, to keep spreading awareness about all this. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Naftal.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race. And don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.